he's out of bed walking. And this is someone I'd never seen out of the bed. And I was like, what is going on? And so I asked his wife, she's like, I thought you were going to tell me what's going on. Like, what is wrong? And so he's walking around like this man who's not been out of bed is like leaning down, looking under the bed, playing hide and seek. And he keeps saying the name Anna. And so I turned to his wife and I'm like, who is Anna? Like, I know everyone at this point. And so she was like, Anna is our toddler who drowned. And he wasn't there, but he had always felt very guilty about it. And I was shocked. I'd never even heard of Anna. I didn't even know that they had ever had a child. And he was playing hide and seek with her. But he recognized me and talked to me too. Like, he was like, hey, Hadley. And so it was crazy. I just was completely shocked.
Hey there, I'm your host, Sarah Lorenzini, a rapid response nurse and educator who loves telling stories to teach critical thinking. This podcast is for nurses who want the knowledge, skills, and confidence to respond to any emergency. With almost 20 years of experience in the ER and critical care nursing, and a master's degree in nursing education, I have a lot of stories to share, and I love to nerd out and break down the pathophysiology, pharmacology, and nurses' role in emergencies. Stories bring learning to life. It is way easier to learn from and remember the stories that my colleagues and mentors have told me than anything I've read in a textbook. And that is why I made this podcast. Every episode is packed full of exactly what you need to know to handle whatever crisis that could arise on your shift. It's one thing to get the right answer on the test, but knowing how to detect when your patient is declining and what to do when your patient is crashing is what will make or break your day and might just save your patient's life.
Hey, everybody, and welcome back to the Rapid Response RN podcast. I am so very excited for my guest today. With me, I have Hadley Vallejos. She is a hospice nurse and now author of my new favorite book. It's called The In-Between, about her experiences caring for patients. And it's also just her beautiful life story. Hadley, welcome to the Rapid Response RN.
Thank you so much for having me.
Glad to have you. So I just want to say, I know we've never met until this moment, but I feel like I know you already because I've heard your life story and your heart, and it's so beautiful. I just came back from a big nursing conference and I devoured your book. I read the entire thing on the flight there and the flight back, and it was so good. I know the people sitting around me were probably wondering, what in the world is she reading? Because she's smiling and crying and then laughing. Like, what is this girl reading? Because it was such a good book. So thank you for the time you spent writing it, because I feel like it's something that every nurse needs to hear. So I don't want to give away your entire book today, but I do want people to hear your heart a little bit. So can we just start from the top? Tell me how you became a nurse, why you became a nurse, and then how, and then what brought you to hospice nursing? Because it's unusual for someone your age to end up as a hospice nurse. So tell us how you ended up in that role.
Yeah, absolutely. So I always wanted to be a writer, to be an author. That was my plan. I went off to Florida State University right after high school. And but life had other plans for me, like it does so many of us. I ended up pregnant at 19 in between my freshman and sophomore year. And of course, I said, okay, I can't stay at Florida State. Making it as a writer isn't going to cut it whenever you're a single mom and very young. So I started researching, and I think so many nurses find themselves in that situation and they say, okay, 2 to 3 years and I can be a registered nurse. And it's a very, very stable income with a lot of different options for hours, different career paths. And that's what I did. And I feel like I ended up where I was supposed to. And that was the path that I was meant to follow. I did a year-long externship at a hospital, going on float pool to all the different areas. Ended up working in immediate care for a little bit, then in a nursing home, which is where I was introduced to hospice. Because as you know, in nursing school, we really don't learn much about it. Mm-hmm. And so that is when I really saw hospice and said, that's what I want to be doing. I love the one-on-one. And so started applying to jobs and eventually was able to get a job. And I've been doing it ever since.
That's awesome. So now that you've been doing hospice for a while, Are there any like misconceptions you feel like nurses have about hospice, or maybe things that you didn't know before you were a hospice nurse, things that you want to dispel or just shed some light on for those of us that don't know as much about hospice as you obviously do?
Yeah, I think that it is like you said, there, I'm definitely the youngest at my job and I always have been. And I think that that is what a lot of people think, that it's like for something that you do like near the end of your career. But truly, it is its own specialty. And although, I mean, I don't know how to like manage multiple drips anymore, I have learned other things that are so important, such as communication styles and how to, you know, really care for a patient as a whole. And, you know, there are other skills that I'm also very, very good at, such as Foley catheter care and managing pain medications and things like that. But it is not necessarily something that you only do at the end of your career.
Yeah, for sure. And I agree with you. I feel like it's such an opportunity to be with someone who is suffering. You know, like I didn't go to nursing school just to like do all the quote unquote cool stuff. I really just wanted to help people in general. So whether it's the patient or their family or just making someone feel better as they're passing, all of that to me is just such an honor and privilege. So it's it's not a traditional path for a young nurse, but I agree. What a rewarding career that you have found, that found you, I guess, depending on how you look at it. So my podcast is an educational podcast. I was wondering if you would take a little bit and just educate us. What are some things that we can expect to happen when our patient's passing? Like, I think a lot of us know what to expect right before they code.
Yeah.
And we know what to do when they code. But what about when we're going to make the decision to let them pass peacefully? What are some of like the things that you can expect as they evolve, or as they get closer to that point?
One thing that, you know, a lot of people don't know, and I didn't know until I went into hospice, is that it's very normal for our bodies to stop eating and drinking near, you know, the last couple of days to last week. It is normal for our bodies to do. And a lot of people think like, okay, well, we need to do IV fluids, or we need to feed them, or, you know, heaven forbid, tube feeding. But some things like that can actually speed up death, such as IV fluids. And it took a little bit for me to understand, you know, when I first got into hospice and I was like, well, we're not doing IV fluids because it hurts them to put an IV in and we don't want to do that. But it's actually more than that. You know, it can cause the fluids to build up in their lungs or the third spacing and can cause their death to be more painful. And our bodies know what to do at the end of life. And we know to stop eating or drinking. And, you know, that's a big thing that we learn. And, you know, it's natural for people to be kind of semi-comatose at the end or comatose before they die. And, you know, that's really what we can expect. But I always say just how our bodies know how to give birth, our bodies know how to die.
Yeah. So my very first time letting a patient pass, I was an ER nurse at the start of my career, and I had seen lots of people die, but usually it was like after a cardiac arrest and we couldn't resuscitate. But I was 19 years old and a patient came in, their heart rate was like 25, 30. And EMS is like, yeah, they're a DNR, they're hospice. I don't know why the family called 911, but they were like freaking out when we got there and we asked them, what do you want us to do? We're not supposed to be doing an intervention at this point. They are a hospice patient that's chosen palliative care for themselves. But the family was just so upset and they just didn't know what to do but to call 911. So she ended up in my ER bay. Now, this was like a very busy day, as every day is in the ER, and the patient's in like a curtained room, not even like a fully private room. And I just remember as a new nurse, like watching her heart rate get lower and lower and her stats drop. And I was like, I know what to do to fix this, but like, what do I do when I'm not going to fix it? And so at that point, I just had to make the decision to like shift my normal flow of like, go, 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 fix it, fix it, fix it.
Yeah.
To, I was like, okay, can we make sure the family's on their way? Mm-hmm. Okay, good. And I just like dimmed the lights in the room and I pulled up a chair and I held her hand. I just told her like, I'm here with you and your family's on their way. I'm going to make you comfortable. I got blankets. And then not knowing what else to do because I had no interventions to offer, I just sang to her, just like a calming song.
Yeah.
She didn't respond to me at all. I mean, obviously she was very, very near death. But I remember just holding her hand and her family finally arrived and I got chairs for them. And we just kind of all sat around with tissues and watched her take her last breath in the ER. And that was such a shift for me as one, a new grad and an ER nurse who's trained to fix it, fix it, fix it. It was so different. But that was a good day for me as a nurse.
Good.
Because I felt like what I did was so valuable that the fixing isn't the only great thing we can do as nurses, but I got to be there for this precious patient in her literally her last moments. And I got to support this family who was having a hard time with that decision and just let them know that even though it was uncomfortable for me, that this is okay, what we're doing. This is what her wishes were. I've had several hospice patients since then, but that was my first one. I just remember how hard it was to shift gears from what interventions can I do?
Yeah, that's how we're trained.
To how can I just promote comfort and peace? So, and you get to do that every day. How rewarding is that? I mean, I know it's hard as well, but sometimes the hard things are the most beautiful, you know, in our lives.
Absolutely.
So are there any other symptoms or assessment findings that you have found almost like every time, or what to expect when you've seen your patients? What are things that you teach the family to kind of look out for?
Yeah. So it's normal for people to start sleeping more. So we'll, you know, that's one of the things that we'll see, you know, in the last month or so is, you know, they'll go from like you and I, you know, we sleep 10 hours at night or they'll sleep 10 hours at night. That's pretty normal for people to only being awake for a couple of hours a day. So that's very normal for us to see people start sleeping a lot more, eating less. Of course, more dependence and ADLs is very normal as well. And then, you know, in that last week, it's very normal for people to see their deceased loved ones, possibly have a surge of energy. And then, you know, after that is usually when we'll see them go kind of semi-comatose, comatose. And then we'll see like modeling is a sign for us. And then breathing changes, you know, the long pauses between breaths. And then vital signs, you know, they'll go all types of crazy, but like you said, the heart rate will really slow before they die.
So those are some symptoms that you would see. You as the hospice nurse, what are some things that you can offer patients besides just your presence and your knowledge? What are you, can you offer as far as nursing care to make them more comfortable in those final weeks, days, moments of their life?
So we definitely have medications, of course, if there's any pain. Usually if they're in that semi-comatose to comatose state, we'll do Roxanol morphine, the liquid that will dissolve in their cheek so that they're not having to swallow. And then we can crush Ativan and mix it with that if they're having any kind of agitation as well. You know, we'll do that. Sometimes people will have like a gurgling because they can't swallow. So we have what's called hycosamine levosin, which can kind of dry that up. Although studies say that it is not bothersome to patients. It's really more for the families because it can be hard to hear.
Yeah.
We can do oxygen for comfort, wound care if any kind of wounds come up, Foley catheter care, and a lot of listening, a lot of talking, and really making sure that the family is okay and the patient is okay, and a lot of education because, you know, unlike the hospital, we're not there 24/7. We're available 24/7, but the families are the ones, you know, changing briefs and giving most of the medication and doing that. So it's a lot of education for them.
Yeah. I know one thing that I do when I have hospice patients now or patients who we decided to pursue palliative as our priority versus fixing. Sometimes the patients come to me and they're not at their baseline, how they were, say, a month ago. And so I'll just say the best and ask the family, tell me what you know about them. And just giving the family a chance to like tell their story and reflect upon it. And sometimes they'll even tell like jokes and like quirky things about the loved one. But I feel like it's good for me to know this patient I'm caring for who I've maybe never even spoken to because they came to me so sick, but also for the family to get a chance to like process this person they loved and how things are shifting in their life, moving towards death. But I enjoy that so very much. I wanted to talk a little bit more about what you said with patients being visited by their loved ones, because I have seen that too with patients. Not many people are aware of that phenomenon. And then the other one I wanted to speak to is that last burst of energy that people get before they pass. So of my four grandparents, three of them have already passed away, all three of which got to go with hospice care. So none of it was sudden or unexpected. It was really beautiful, actually, how they got to leave this world. And all three of them had exactly that burst of energy in the end.
Mm-hmm.
And every time all the family was like, oh, look at Granny. Look how she's talking. She's looking so much better. And like my granny in particular, she's like, I want everybody here. Get everybody here. She wanted the whole family to come see her and visit her. And she was like one by one, just giving wisdom and blessings. And I mean, she just came to life at 93 years old.
Yeah.
And everyone's around her and talking and laughing and eating. And she just doing great. And everyone's like, oh, maybe they'll discharge her from hospice. Look how much better she's gotten. Wow. We're pretty close. I think I want to stay the night at granny's house tonight because I feel like tonight's where I'm going to be the night. And it's sure enough, it was.
Yeah.
So can you talk through one, what is that surge of energy? Do we know anything about it medically, or is it all just like, we don't know what's going on, but it's a phenomenon we've seen. And then I would love to hear some of your experience about patients being visited by loved ones before they pass on to whatever's next.
We don't know why the surge of energy happens, but we see it enough. And sometimes it's not as pronounced as like what's in my book or like your grandmother. Sometimes people after patients will die, they'll look back and they'll be like, oh, I think that that was a surge of energy. You know, even if they just had a day where they were awake most of the day and they wanted to eat some ice cream, you know, even that can be like a little surge of energy looking back. But sometimes it's extremely pronounced, but we don't know why it happens. And it's quite interesting. You know, if you're spiritual, people think that it's that little final goodbye before you go, you know, which I think is so beautiful. But yeah, sometimes we see that coupled with seeing deceased loved ones. Sometimes it's before it, where, yeah, people will talk about it very matter of fact. It's not scary. It's always very calming, but they say it. And it always cracks me up how matter of fact people are about it. And they know that they're dead, but they also are just talking to them like we're talking. But they can also talk to us too, which I think is very interesting, how they seem to have one foot in that world and one foot in ours, which is just so, so fascinating. I'm still always fascinated by it whenever I'm there. I think it's a privilege to be able to be in that space with people.
Yeah. I mean, my experience with patients who are having hallucinations, it's not usually a pleasant thing. It's usually scary. You know, the spiders on the wall, the room is changing shape, or, you know, there's like a bad guy's coming to get them. Like it's not usually a good thing, or someone's yelling at them. But in the patients I've seen who have loved ones that come and visited them, it's just like, look who's here.
Yeah.
This is so great. I haven't seen them in forever. We're catching up. Like, it's not like most hallucinations. So what a gift. And I can't explain it for sure. I don't understand how that happens, but I think it's really, really interesting. And I loved all your stories that you shared about all the patients who were visited by their loved ones and how that unfolded and the beautiful things that they were saying to them. It really touched my nurse heart to think about that and to wonder, like, what is my end of life going to be like? You know, who is going to walk me on to whatever's next? So I was wondering if you, without giving away all the stories, but
yeah,
what would you say was the most impactful or most beautiful or enlightening close to death experience you had with a patient as far as being visited by a loved one?
Yeah, I call him Carl in my book, and he definitely for me was very life changing. So after I got my training where I was just shadowing people, I got my first set of patients that were my patients, and he was in that first group of patients that were mine, but I had him for a very, very long time. So I got to know him and his wife so well, and he became like a grandparent to me. I was looking for ways to connect to him. He did not want us in his house. He did not want to be on hospice. You know, the grumpy old men that we all love. And I was looking for ways to connect with him. And he was watching sports on TV. So I was like, oh, my husband loves sports. Like, tell me all about it. Let's talk.
Nice move to connect with them.
So he started telling me about it, and it helped for him opening up. And I was saying like, oh, you're teaching me so much. And I think that that can, you know, when patients don't feel like they're in a role of being like, almost like beneath you, I hate to say, but like where it's like this power kind of thing where you're just like, oh, I'm in control. You're my patient. And so I think that that really helped. And I use that still to this day because of that patient where I'm like, oh, teach me things. I want to learn from you too. So I did that and he loved it. So then he started learning that I was a single mom and I was extremely busy and he couldn't get out of bed because of his congestive heart failure. And so he would just sit there all day and watch TV and watch the news. So he would start writing down news stories for me. And he'd have a little note for me whenever I showed up to just updating me on what was going on. And I loved it. I loved it so much. And I saw him for many, many, many months. And then one day I was in the office and my manager came in and said, hey, his wife needs you. You need to go. So I go to the house, walk into his room, and the bed is empty. And I was like, how dare my manager not tell me that he died and the funeral home has come? Like, what the heck? And so then I hear him and I turn around and he's out of bed walking. And this is someone I'd never seen out of the bed. And I was like, what is going on? And so I asked his wife, like, what is going on? And she's like, I thought you were going to tell me what's going on. Like, what in the world? And so he's like walking around, like, this man who's not been out of bed is like leaning down, like looking under the bed, playing hide and seek. And he keeps saying the name Anna. And so I turned to his wife and I'm like, who's Anna? Like, I know everyone at this point. And so she was like, Anna is our toddler who drowned. And he wasn't there, but he had always felt very guilty about it. And I was shocked. I'd never even heard of Anna. I didn't even know that they had ever had a child. And he was playing hide and seek with her. And I was shocked. But he recognized me and talked to me too. Like, he was like, hey, Hadley. And so it was crazy. I just was completely shocked. And so I was able to get him back into bed eventually, and he, you know, went to sleep. And the next day he was semi-comatose. He did wake up, you know, for a minute for me. And he was like, thank you so much for giving me something to look forward to instead of death. And I, in that moment, and, you know, I've always been like, wow, like, I didn't even think of it that way. It was just like this friendship that we had built, but I hadn't even thought of it that it was like giving him a purpose in life. And, you know, I think about him all the time and his wife, and it was really, really, really special for me. But with the surge of energy and the seeing deceased loved ones, I had seen it before then, but it's different whenever you really like, you're the only nurse for them. So you know their baseline so well. And I knew that I hadn't added any new medications. I knew that, you know, nothing vital sign wise had changed. It was just happening.
Yeah, that's wild. I don't want to say it's crazy. I would say it's just beautiful. That is really beautiful that happens at the end.
Yeah.
Another thing you talk about in the book, and I've experienced this too, is that when the patient finally passes, you can almost like feel it in the room, like something different. I definitely felt that with my grandparents whenever they passed. I had a patient one time that I always remember. He was an LVAD patient at the end of his life. And basically, he just was not doing well. And the family decided that it was not right to keep doing all these interventions to him. And so we actually decided to turn the LVAD off to let him pass peacefully.
Oh, wow.
And I was actually the nurse in the room that had to do that. That was really, really hard. But I had cared for this patient for months in the ICU. And I just loved him. Like, I loved him so much that I decorated his room for Christmas and I brought my kids to sing Christmas carols to him. Like, he was a precious, precious soul. And I remember whenever we did turn the LVAD off, he died, I mean, almost immediately. But you could almost like feel it different in the room. And I have no science to explain what I felt.
Yeah.
But I felt it. His wife felt it. She even said, like, he's gone.
Yeah.
But he's at peace. And I lost it, but lost it in a good way. I was crying with her because I cared for this human, you know, like she did. But you definitely could feel it in the room.
You can.
Even like you talked about one time when you just walked in the house and you knew.
Yeah.
That it was different, that the person's soul was no longer in the home anymore. How would you describe that feeling? Because I don't even have a good word to put to it.
Yeah, you know, I think I've talked to nurses about this before who've said, like, I don't think I've experienced any of this, not necessarily hospice nurses, but just nurses. And I'm like, so if you think about it, like, medically, if you've ever been there when someone dies, you know, a lot of times they can have up to a minute between breaths. So if we're talking from a scientific standpoint, you wouldn't know that someone's actually died until a minute later because the next breath never comes. But I think almost everyone who has ever been there, whenever someone dies, they know when someone dies. It does not take a minute to say another breath has never come. People just know. And I think it's an energy shift in the room. And I kind of describe it very similar to like an elephant in the room, where you just like feel different.
Mm-hmm.
And not necessarily that elephant in the room feeling, but kind of how you're like, you walk into situations and you're like, something's different about this situation.
Mm-hmm. I agree. Yeah, it's hard to describe these things that don't have any like science or data backing to them.
Yeah.
So I wanted to talk a little bit with you, Hadley, about maybe some wisdom you could share for those of us that don't do hospice as much as we do interventions. I saw a TikTok of yours about your experience with a code blue where like they kick the family out and they're like, press harder, break the ribs, like all the seemingly awful stuff that we do in the hospital setting. So as a rapid response nurse, I do a lot of interventions that are not comfortable for patients, obviously with the goal of getting them better so they can go home to their families.
Right.
What is maybe some wisdom you would share with nurses that maybe aren't going to work in hospice, but still are caring for loved ones, either in their final moments because they've chosen that or their final moments because we can't get them back? What are some things we can do that is compassionate both to us as the caregiver and compassionate both to the family as they're watching all of this go down?
What I've noticed just from doing so many death visits, which I think that this can apply to a hospital situation as well, is that there are two types of people, and you can pretty quickly determine how they are. So one type of person will want to tell you how they experience things over and over and over again. And that is how they are trying to process it. So sometimes I'll show up to homes and they'll say, I was holding her hand and she just took her last breath. And then I called my sister, and they are trying to process it and they just want to share the story. And sometimes they'll do it 4 or 5 times. And I just listen like it's the first time every time and kind of rephrase what they said to me so that they can process it. And then the other type of person is anxious about what is happening. And I make sure to tell them every single thing that's about to happen before I do it. And I'll say, you know, I'm going to go in here, I'm going to listen, and I'm going to ensure that they have passed away. After that, I'm going to come and tell you, you're going to have this amount of time, however much time you need. You tell me when you're ready for me to call the funeral home. They take about an hour to get here. If you want to call any family, like they really need to know what's coming next, like no surprises. And I found that by trying to assess what type of person they are, and sometimes they can be both, and making sure that I accommodate that has really, really helped with people reaching out to me later and being like, I just want you to know that like I'm handling things okay because of the way that you were there for me at the time of death.
That's good, Hadley. Are there any like do's and don'ts that you want to share with us as far as like what things to say, what things to not say, things or phrases that have become part of your normal vernacular in caring for patients in their final days or moments?
Yeah. So especially for families, I always try to tell the caregiver that they did a good job. I find that they don't get told that a lot. And as you know, it's like such a difficult job. So I will always affirm them and be like, I just want you to know that, like, I think you're doing such a good job. Like, you're doing such a good job caring for your loved one. And they seem to really, really like that. Because as we know, it's such a difficult job. And you're doing the right thing. And you're so lucky. The patient's so lucky to have you. And I think that that is incredibly important. I know it seems so small, but they really need to hear it because I think that they doubt themselves a lot. I think that that is super, super important.
Are there any like don'ts? Like you've heard nurses say things, you're like, please don't say that to a family who's losing someone.
Yeah. The biggest thing that I'll find people do sometimes is there's such a fine line between sharing your own life so that people don't feel like they are with a robot and putting your problems onto families. And, you know, I think just share the positives, but I have definitely heard before that, or we've gotten talkings before, you know, how they talk to everyone, but they're talking to one person. You're like, who are they talking about? Where they're like, okay, like we cannot put our own problems onto families. Families have all of their own stuff going on. They don't need to hear about how your toddler is sick and you're you haven't slept. Like that just makes them worried that their loved one is not going to be cared for.
Yeah, that's good. That's good advice. And how about as far as like what words to choose when you're talking about death? I hear a lot of nurses not even want to say the word died or death. They just want to say like passed or whatever. What are your thoughts about that?
So, you know, there is such a big movement to say the word death and dying. And I have gone back and forth on this so many times. And the conclusion I've finally come to is that I think it's best to mirror the speech that the family uses. And if they say dead, dying, I will say that. If they say passed away, I will say passed away. In our situations, I know that the concern is that like you say dead so that people understand that they're dead. I have personally never run into an issue where someone does not know that someone's dead. Like that is just a non-issue for me. And I have ran into issues where people say that they did not like that you said dead whenever they said passed away. They felt like it was crass. So I just mirror whatever they say.
Oh, that's good.
And I think that that's the best thing that you can do because people do have strong feelings about that.
So I have a couple more questions for you. What would you say, because I'm sure you hear this all the time, people in their final days and moments, they have so much wisdom to impart from their years of experience and what they've gone through in life. What are some of the big lessons that you have learned from your patients that affect who you are today as a person and how you live your life?
Yeah, I've definitely learned that, you know, you can, time is the most valuable commodity that you have. At the end of your life, you know, they say like, if you were given $1 million right now, but you die tomorrow, would you take it? Like, no, no one would. But so many people, I think, lose sight of that. And they spend so much of their life really working for more objects. And so I really have like taken a step back from that and really focused on quality time and how I want to be, you know, living my life. And with spending so much time with people who do and do not have regrets and people who are religious and not religious, what I finally learned is that the people who are at peace at the end are people who just live their life every single day being like, okay, if I die tomorrow, I will have no issue talking to whoever it is about how I lived my life.
And then if you could go back and maybe give some wisdom to young Hadley starting out in nursing school, is there anything that you would share with her about maybe what you've learned or nursing as a whole?
I think one of the biggest things is that for me in nursing school and as a new nurse, I felt like everyone else around me like had it figured out, like what specialty they wanted to go into. And, you know, like you know, that last year, everyone was like, this is what I'm going to be. And I kind of always felt like something was wrong with me because I did not know. I wish someone would have told me, you have so much time to figure it out. Like you can change your nursing career 20 years in.
Yeah.
Like truly no one really knows. Like, and that's the beauty of it. And you do not have to have it all figured out.
I agree. I mean, that's been my story. I thought I was going to be a midwife and I've never worked labor delivery in my entire career. Here I am being at ER, ICU, rapid response nurse. Never was that on my horizon, but it's definitely a good fit for the way that I'm wired. So yeah, I agree, Hadley, 100%. That's good advice. So all the new nurses or nursing students listening, you don't have to figure it out. In fact, you can think you figured it out and it might change in the future. So just give up figuring it out and just do what you love and what gives you life for sure. So Hadley, as we close out, I want everyone to know how to find you. So how can they find you? Tell us about how to get a hold of your book, all of that.
Yeah. So I'm Nurse Hadley on all platforms. And my book is called The In-Between. And it will be actually in all bookstores. So anywhere you buy books, you can get it, which is super exciting.
And when does it release?
June 13th.
Just around the corner, guys. It is truly a must read for all nurses, whether you're working hospice or ICU or med-surg or anywhere. Because Hadley does such a good job, not only telling her life story, which is beautiful, but also telling about the patient stories and just reminding us like the humanity and the beauty of what we do. Hadley, you're clearly not caught up in like the task of nursing. I can see in all the stories you tell, some of the tasks that seemed menial, those are so memorable. And you can feel like what you're doing has value, even though someone's like, oh, you just made a sandwich, but that helped you connect with that patient. So yes, I would say any nurse listening, this is a must read. If you know a nurse or a nurse is about to graduate from nursing school, this is a book that they really need to have because it reminds us all the why behind what we're doing. So Hadley, thank you so much for your time today. Thank you for your book. It is a gift to nursing, to humanity as a whole. I wish you all the best as this book is released. I really think it's amazing. Thank you so much.
Thank you.